Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont. And on this week's show, we are talking all things the Indonesian Grand Prix. And it was a fantastic ride from KTM's Miguel Oliveira to take a sensational wet weather victory. But it was also a dramatic weekend for Marc Marquez, for all the riders on a new track. So we're going to dive straight into that. And I think we have to start with Marc Yuri because... It was the biggest story of the weekend. We came into this Indonesia weekend expecting Honda to be really, really strong because Paul Espargaró, of course, topped the test there. But things have changed since then. There's a new asphalt. There was a new rear tyre, which was an old rear tyre, and that caused a lot of problems for Honda. And it all culminated in what was the most horrifying accident I've seen Marc Marquez suffer in a long, long time.
Yeah, I think that, made a really good summary of the all things related. This new old rear construction had a huge impact on the things on the sportive way, and of course we all know Mark. We know that his character is like this. He's trying to get the most of every single situation, despite, and sometimes this means taking a lot of risk. And yeah, we've seen that really, really clear this time. But it is what it is. I mean, we cannot change him. I would say that the best thing of all this really worrying situation is that Mark is still Mark. He's been really, really, really honest and really himself. I mean, we have seen him having two crashes in less than 7 minutes apart in Saturday's Q1, and then the huge crash on Sunday's warm-up. So Mark is still Mark, but from 2013 to 2019, he was Superman. Now, every time that he crashes, he has something. And it's starting to be a bit scary.
Before we talk about the tyres, I mean, the whole Mark thing is interesting because we saw, like you say, with the two crashes in qualifying, but it wasn't just those crashes. All weekend he was having lots and lots of moments, lots of rear end slides, lots of front end moments. A big crash seemed inevitable at some point because it seemed like Mark was overriding the bike in a way that we haven't seen him do since he's come back from his injury. And I think it's a strange approach for him because he knows the risks now, and yet we know what Mark does, but it just seemed, I don't know, it just seemed like he was pushing for nothing.
Yeah, well, we've seen that, and it's very interesting what you said because we come from a situation where all the others had to take a lot of risk for riding that, let's say, old RC 213. But now it's Mark who has to take a lot of risks, and he crashes quite a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong, he also did crash with the other bike, but he was more comfortable finding the limit on that bike and identifying the limit on that bike than on this new bike. And by this new old rear construction, the bike seems to be even more dangerous than the old one.
Paul Espargaró made he was not happy with the situation at all. You know, he said that it's unfairly penalized Honda. And I think he has a point because Honda have developed a bike around the 2022 tires, not around the 2018 carcass. And to be fair, none of the other manufacturers have, but I would argue that none of the other manufacturers have made such a big step with their motorcycle as Honda has since the last time this tire is raced. And I think that's a very fair point from Paul.
Yeah, and I mean, don't forget that we have the comparison from the last test. I mean, from the last process of the season. I mean, Honda was, I would say, the most competitive manufacturer there in Mandalika. Even Nakagami was super, super fast.
Yeah.
So, and they were completely lost last weekend. So, I can understand that the track was resurfaced. I can understand that the conditions were super extreme, but what, in my opinion, is not acceptable is this kind of solution, last minute change. We're going to bring that without test anything. And it has a lot of impact. This is MotoGP. This is, this is, I mean, this cannot happen. This shouldn't.
I think what would frustrate Honda even more is the fact that the race ended up being shorter. If it was going to be a dry race, it was going to be a 20-lap race, which they could have then probably raced that other tire. Maybe they might have had to have done an Argentina situation or a Phillip Island situation where they maybe had to do a bike swap just to be safe. But surely that would have been a better approach than introducing this tire that, like you say, was untested. And yes, Ducati found it fine. Yamaha found it all right. But Suzuki struggled a lot with it as well. You know, it's not the way it should be.
No, but all the situation, in my opinion, is not at the standards that it should be. I mean, even the track has to be explored and analyzed before the tests, because then it's too late already. It's already too late. Then we're going to resurface 1.6 kilometers. Yes, but it's late already, as we have shown last weekend.
Yeah,
I mean, because they shortened the race because the last corner was completely destroyed.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Don't apologize. You make very fair points. It was, you know, I think it's been with the race was great and everything, and it was nice to be in Indonesia again. And I think all those facts have kind of clouded the fact that it wasn't really a good weekend for MotoGP. I mean, really. I mean, it wasn't the standard that we expect. And especially when you consider safety has been such a talked about subject over the past year because of what happened last year at several races, junior races. The fact that we were in this situation is not all for the sake of what was essentially money to be in Indonesia. It wasn't great. It wasn't great at all.
Well, and also because of money, if you want to put it this way, you need to make sure that the weekend is a complete success.
Yeah, and I don't think you can say that about this one.
Of course not. Of course not. Nobody can say that. No. So that's why if you really consider this race a vital point for the next chapters of the MotoGP championship, you have to make sure that you have the best possible outcome.
Yes, absolutely.
So you have to put a lot of efforts. So since last race of last year until the test, they should have been there two times, three times, just to make sure that the tarmac is in good condition, then everything. So when we were there, when we flew there for the test, I was completely in shock. We talked about that many times, and I was completely in shock about what we saw. So I think that if this race is so important, they need to put all the efforts.
100%. And I think, you know, it doesn't even extend to that. It was a fact as well that the MotoGP is massive in Indonesia, and yet we didn't really see a big crowd. It's because people couldn't go because it was too expensive. It's difficult to get to. The infrastructure is not there. It raises a lot of questions about why we rushed this race.
I understand, but I'm gonna touch a tricky point, but I can understand that everybody wants to make money, and that by probably putting the tickets in a, let's say, Indonesian standard price, wouldn't make any difference, but from this point to the opposite, there's a long way. There's a different kind of gradations.
Yes.
So I'm not naive to think that they're gonna, they're gonna give the tickets for free.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I mean, between that and by pretending that or trying to make people to invest half or let's say 2 weeks of salary, 1 week of salary on buying a ticket, there's a more options.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you consider just off the top of my head, if you were to go, if a British fan wanted to go to Silverstone for the MotoGP, it'll cost them £90, which is, you know, it's not very much of your wages to go and see MotoGP for 3 days. But of course, that's a much more complicated topic that we'll talk about the racing now, because it was actually a very interesting race, all things considered. And we were lucky we got a race given how bad the weather was before it. But thank goodness they had a shaman on hand to help the weather. I don't think I've ever seen that before at a motor racing event.
Yeah, it worked.
Well, I suppose they can say now it worked. But what definitely worked was the KTM this weekend. And with Miguel Oliveira on it, it was a really stunning ride, and one that he needed, because before this weekend, between his last podium and this win, he's only scored 21 points. That's 11 races of not very good results, which is not really acceptable for a rider as good as Miguel. So it was good to see him back on form.
Yeah, I mean, he did a fantastic job. It was an impeccable race from lap one, from the start. I want to see them racing in Europe.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I need a double or triple check. Not even Argentina will be a clear picture of what we're going to find, what we're going to have once the championship comes back to Europe. So
yeah,
it's really good for KTM. They have made a step, but I just want to let's calibrate the amount of, you know, the distance of this step once we're back in Europe.
Because
Qatar is a very special race, and this one even more.
Yeah, for sure. And this is something Marc Marquez said, of course. The KTM's a bike he understands least. He said that in Qatar. And, you know, there are at least positive signs. You know, both KTMs were quite quick in the dry qualifying in Mandalika. It's two races in different conditions that they've been quick in. But it's like you say, and as we've seen so many times before with KTM, it's really, really difficult to really understand where they are in the pecking order. But it does at least look from the outside, especially compared to the start of last year, they have made a significant improvement. The bike does look better.
Yeah, and if we have to trust what they say, they haven't done any major change in the bike. They only did adjust few steps. I spoke with a KTM guy, and I mean, in the last days, and he told, listen, we haven't done any crazy thing on the bike, just we have adjusted a few things, and also the riders have more experience, and it has made a difference.
It seems as well, what's also made a big difference for KTM is the fact that they're not doing lots of development, like they're not throwing things at the bike constantly. This is something that I think Brad and Miguel spoke about in testing.
Well, because I think if Pecco was a bit annoyed by being forced to test a lot of things, I mean, he was testing 10% of the amount of things that the official KTM riders were obligated to were testing in the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, was it not at a test a couple of years ago? They had like 17 different chassis, like variations to try or something mental.
Yeah, and they at some point they had to stop this madness, because otherwise it's impossible to be. And even Danny said that they need to reduce the gear and try to understand what they were doing.
Yeah, and I think you can, you know, KTM have learned that lesson. I think Honda had the same problem over the last sort of year, where all the riders were doing too many different things and they didn't really have a unified thing. We're seeing that now with Ducati, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like you wrote a fantastic feature after Qatar that you can go and read on Autosport and motorsport.com. That, you know, they've got three different specs of bike, and this weekend we didn't really see a clear indication as to what bike was better, because the 2022 bikes were okay for the Pramac riders, but Pecco was not very good in the rain, Bastianini was nowhere. It's just very difficult.
Well, I mean the Ducati example, it's even worse, because they have three different specs, but the most Evolution bike is the satellite, is that the one that used the Pramac riders.
Yes.
Which means like the B team. The second one is the one that are using the official riders.
Mm-hmm.
And the most competitive of them all is the oldest bike, which has been used for the clients, like Bastianini, Bezzecchi, and they look really amazing. What Ducati is going to do? Where are they going to put their effort? In the bike that is not working, but on paper is the most modern?
Yeah. Oh,
so I can understand that they are in a bit of a cul-de-sac.
Yeah, yeah, they are. And I mean, had it not been for the rain, I suspect Bastianini would have been very, very strong in that race. I mean, Bezzecchi looked really, really good in the dry on his old bike. To be fair to the official riders, Miller was strong kind of all weekend, and Bagnaia was good in qualifying. It just didn't work for him in the race. He couldn't have any front feeling on the wet tires. But, you know, regardless of that fact, if you look at the championship standings, Bagnaia, who we all expected to be the favourite, is last in the championship. Yes, it's only been two races, but whatever way you look at it, it's just not good enough for Ducati, and there's no immediate sign that they know how to figure out the bike.
Yeah, I mean, and not only that, but also Martin is has a zero, has 0 points. So and Miller, I mean, this was the weekend for Miller, and he ended up being Miller.
Fourth. Yeah, he ended up being fourth behind Zarco, you know. Speaking about, you know, wanting to see KTM in Europe, I really want to see Ducati in Europe, because I think this will show the true picture of where they are, and hopefully they can figure it out. But one team that did figure it out in Indonesia was Yamaha. It was a better weekend in general for both factory riders, but Fabio, more importantly. The fact that he was so we know that Yamaha works when it's full wet, but if Quartararo looked like he could have won that race had it been seven laps longer. He didn't really understand how much pace he had to begin with. He wasn't actually aware he could go as fast as he could, which shows just how bad the Yamaha has been in the wet in the past.
I agree with you that with seven more laps, Fabio could have perfectly won the race. I think he was super happy, and I think that it can be a boost, a real boost for him. Let's see how this bike performs in Argentina and in the next coming races, because don't forget that in a month we're going back to Europe, and the Yamaha on paper has always been quite good, but we cannot forget these weaknesses that this bike has at the moment. I mean, the lack of stop speed is there, and the
rear grip as well.
Yes. So let's see, because again, we cannot take any clear conclusion about the last race.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, kind of against the sort of conventional thinking, Fabio said that the new tire casing kind of gave, they had quite a lot of grip at Indonesia, Yamaha, which is interesting. And I did ask him actually the fact, he said the Yamaha found something in the wet. So I asked, is he confident that Yamaha could find something in the dry? And he actually said that really this weekend was a bit of luck because of the track surface as well. So like you say, it's just really hard to understand where Yamaha really is right now.
Yes, but this kind of, how do you call it, parallelism?
Yeah.
Don't normally work, in my opinion. Oh, let's try to work on wet, and then we can apply. If the bike is normally bad or slow on dry, will normally be slow on wet, and vice versa. So, they need to go what they have. And, of course, there will be races like this one where the top speed was not the most important thing, when they will be able to manage and to make up the weak points. But In a dry season, I think they will struggle quite a lot.
Yeah, me too. Suzuki is another manufacturer. We still don't really know how good the bike is. We think it's great, but this weekend was tough for them because of, again, the rear tire change. Mir had an absolute nightmare until the race. He was 18th in qualifying. Yeah, we think Suzuki has a brilliant bike, but we just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. But again, I think they are waiting for Europe. I know that it can be annoying what I'm repeating, but I think in their case, it's even more clear than in the others because they truly believe that they have a good bike and a fast bike and a bike that has made a step in compared with last year's. So, but they need to have a clear race, a clear weekend in a track that they know, that they have data, that, you know. So I'm sure that they will be able to make that step that we, let's say, identified on pre-season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the fact 5th and 6th out of a weekend that was going to be quite tricky for them, I'm sure they'll be happy with that. It's consistency, at least.
Yeah, and don't forget that I think both Mir and Rins have been very clever on keeping the positions, on not making a big mistake crashing, because I think they are playing a long distance
race. Yeah.
So, especially Rins, that he understands that his position is not as safe, his ride is not as safe as it was in the past. So I think he doesn't want to put himself in a danger zone. So he prefers to keep scoring points and points and points and points. And let's see where he will be at the middle of the season and the end of the season. But I think it's clever what they are doing at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I still do fancy, certainly Mir, I still think he is going to be a championship guy. There's a bit of a swagger about Mir, and if the bike is as good as they think it is, I think Mir will be strong. But yeah, you can't ignore Rins has been solid these past couple of weekends. He's not made stupid mistakes.
And not only that, even in precision test.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super focus. And you can feel that, you can notice that also talking with him. I mean, yeah, I would say that I see him more focused than ever.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's very easy to forget how quick a rider Alex Rins is. This is a guy that's won 3 Grand Prix. You know, he beat Marc Marquez in a straight head-to-head fight at Silverstone. You know, not many people have done that. It's good to see Rins is doing things he needs to. Another rider doing something he needed to do was Darren Binder. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very strong ride for him. And he copped a lot of criticism from Remy Gardner and Qatar about his riding style. But he had a really, really good run and credit where credit is due.
Yeah. But I mean, don't forget that this was a crazy race. Mm. And on the craziness, I mean, he's the number one. So, so I mean, everything was, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to make a joke, but anything was allowed on that race because it was completely madness. So, and he is, let's say, he's used to, you know, navigate, to surf on this kind of situations, on this kind of environments.
Yeah, he's as my colleague Tom Howard would say, he's a bit of a loose unit. But to be fair to Darren, he's spoken a lot about he doesn't want this reputation that he has. So I would like to see him in a few races' time, once he knows the bike a bit more, in a dry situation, how he behaves. And if he has tidied up his act, then fair enough. Good for him.
No, I mean full credit to him.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, full credit to him. I mean, but again, he doesn't want his reputation. Yeah, of course. But this reputation doesn't come from nothing.
Well, exactly. I mean? Yeah, for sure.
Now he's been doing a really, really, really good job, 100%. He cannot say, no, I don't want this reputation. Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, my friend. But what have you done in the past?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, yes, you're absolutely right. We'll see. Of course, we go to Argentina next, which will be interesting. We've not been there for a few years, and I'm sure it'll be another quiet, calm weekend, as it has been these past two weekends. But until then, Yuri, thank you very much for your company. I know it's been a long weekend for you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the listeners. If you like what you heard, go listen to all of our other podcasts on Autosport, motorsport.com. And if you're a native Spanish speaker, Yuri has his own Spanish podcast with our colleague Herman. So go and listen to that as well. And of course, keep following Autosport and motorsport.com for all things MotoGP. We've been busier than ever these past couple of weeks. So I hope you enjoy what you're reading. But until the next time, keep looking after yourselves. And it is a very warm goodbye.